We have a few minutes left until 8:30 for questions and answers. There is a roving microphone, which Phil has, if anyone has a question. We've got this little table over here. Maybe if Sue, I'm sorry, I'm just interrupting her dessert, but we'll ask them to come to the front and they can share this microphone.
The nice thing about Theandrofem is it's a dose for women. So that even if, and the measurement is not as sophisticated as some of it would like, so if women measure it out and they err a bit on the generous side, you don't have a problem. I've had patients insist on trying the Androfort or Andromen, and their levels are really high. They get levels of 7 and 10 and stuff. So because to measure it precisely to get a low dose is almost impossible, and that's what happens when women use the testosterone gels as well. So you get over treatment. So stick with the Androfem.
I'll just add one extra to that. Androfort 5 is only available nationally. Androfort 2 and Androfem need to be accessed from WA. So definitely do not use Androfort 5 for the ladies.
So Androfort 2, you've got the same problems of obtaining it as the Androfem.
Exactly.
So
Just stick to pink for girls, blue for boys.
Yeah. Firstly, thank you both for terrific presentations. Very, very interesting. The questions around all these older ladies with testosterone issues, in other words, would be helped by some testosterone from the point of view of their psychosexual function, who've got a history of breast cancer that's positive or estrogen positive for progesterone, perhaps. Is it safe?
Probably not.
Can you elaborate a bit?
I mean, testosterone is used at one time to treat breast cancer, but really, if you've got a woman on an aromatase inhibitor, she probably has relatively high testosterone anyway because she can't convert it to estrogen. So she's probably not going to benefit. And her problem's more likely to be vaginal atrophy, and they're women with vaginal dryness, etc. And for tamoxifen, we've tried it in women on tamoxifen. It probably is relatively safe if you're on tamoxifen, but it doesn't work. I've tried it in so many patients, probably because it's blocked by SHBG as well. And then if a woman's on neither, you're giving an aromatizable compound which can be converted in the breast and other tissues into estrogen. So you're actually giving them a substrate for estrogen that could be very bad. So no, I would not be comfortable.
So could I follow it up with another question about the vaginal atrophy in the older women on testosterone? Is that not an issue for them in terms of discomfort, even if they have the arousal and the libido?
So if a woman's on testosterone, she might still have vaginal atrophy and you'd still get vaginal estrogen.
Thank you for the lovely presentation. I have a question. If a lady have polycystic ovaries and she complain of sexual dysfunction, and you measure her blood and you know that her DHEAS is high, her testosterone is high, but still she had this problem, and you ruled out that she's not depressed and other issues. So would you try giving her a treatment or?
So if you have a premenopausal woman who has PCOS and her androgens are in the high normal range, now I would not give her testosterone, but we know that such women often have complicated low self-esteem, and it's likely to be related to poor body self-image. Before her PCOS, I mean, if she's got obesity, etc., it's likely to be related to that. If she's been well treated and she's obesity isn't an issue and she's had her hirsutism treated, it could still be related to bad experiences when she's been younger and had more florid PCOS. So it's more likely to be psychosocial than hormonal at all. On the flip side, I occasionally see women who are in their 50s who had PCOS when they were younger and ran at much higher testosterone levels. So their testosterone levels for a woman in their 50s are relatively normal, but for them are actually quite low. And they will sometimes benefit with testosterone therapy because it's the lower, older testosterone levels are actually not normal for them. But for younger women, it's usually more likely that body image, self-esteem, prior experience thing.
Can I just ask, what is the withdrawal or the withdrawal back if I give the testosterone for such person? Are you worried about side effects?
The main side effects that we worry about with testosterone are the ones that you and the patient can see, which are acne and hirsutism, voice change and hair loss. So if you push the testosterone level up, you will get androgenic side effects. I'm not worried about cardiovascular disease or insulin resistance or any of that. I'm more worried about the obvious side effects that will distress the patient. They're the ones that come before anything.
I've just got one question for Caroline.
Thank you.
Caroline, the patient who was on the pharmaceutical benefit scheme when they was less than 8 nanomoles per litre, who now no longer qualifies because they're between 6 and 8, for the GPs in the audience, could you make a comment on that? And also the safety of the prostate with testosterone use. Would you mind commenting on that, please?
Unfortunately, there was a decision for no grandfathering. So, unfortunately, you would have, on 31st of March, you would have qualified for treatment 2015, and on the 1st of April, you didn't qualify for treatment. For some of those men, it was actually a very good opportunity to go back and ease them off their treatment, and that was difficult because they were then having to pay for it. There were a certain percentage of men that we saw who we had in the clinic had made the decision to treat, who had persistently low levels, had symptoms that we thought were reasonable and appeared to benefit. And when we went back and reinvestigated them and took them off their treatment gradually, in fact, now maintained reasonable testosterone levels. A number of these men had, in fact, lost weight. You could argue which is the egg and which is the chicken. It's one of the things that T4DM will look at. If we made them feel better and they went to the gym and lost weight, therefore their testosterone levels came up. Some of these men now will opt to continue on treatment that is they're paid for by themselves, and so certainly preparations whereby they will get more advantage for a lower dose. So I think your data from the scrotal application, men will do the sums for themselves and they will work it out. Of course, some men who have private health insurance can recoup on that, but for some of the men it really is quite an issue for them, and it would worry me that these men would go back to products like Sustanon that I really don't think are the right product for a number of men. With regard to prostate, of course, there is no clear guideline. We debated this very much when we wrote the MJA guidelines because there is no data. Of course, you do not want to treat a man who has an unknown prostate condition with testosterone. And we would routinely monitor according to the guidelines, current guidelines relevant to their age matched peers. When you look at all the data from the randomised controlled trials, of course we have no long-term outcome data. The data from the testosterone trials is not adequate to make any statement, but if you pool together, people are very fond of doing obviously meta-analyses, then if you look at all the studies, even in the treatment arms where an increase in PSA, which is what you would expect when you treat a man with testosterone and increases testosterone levels, if you get to a certain mark, you trigger a biopsy. So men in the active groups of RCTs have more more prostate interventions, but even in that, where you would think you would then pick up incidental prostate cancers, that has not been shown to be the case. So there is no data that we can put together to suggest there is a risk, but we have no studies adequately powered to answer that question. So do not treat a man without knowing his prostate condition. It is reasonable to monitor according to age. But again, in older men, this is only my personal practice, I'm a little more circumspect about giving a long-acting intramuscular preparation. I would much rather give a transdermal preparation that I can stop if necessary.
Thank you.
the logistics of ordering Androfem, please?
Oh, it's very simple. I mean, because we're all registered nationally, so the company will provide order forms, and you write a prescription, and the patient posts the prescription to Lawley Pharmaceuticals, and they send the prescription to the patient.
They're online.
Oh.
Yep.
Oh, the order forms aren't online, are they?
Yep.
The order forms.
GPs can prescribe. The order forms are online.
Downloaded. Don't want to run out.
There are forms out the front there. Let me just clarify, they don't have to get it from Lawley Pharmaceuticals. Well, from Lawley Pharmaceuticals, there is an arm called Lawley Direct, which is an actual pharmacy, but they can go to any pharmacy in Western Australia. It's just the Lawley Direct arm sort of streamlines it for patients, because not everybody knows pharmacies, but they can Google, and any pharmacy in WA will dispense as well. So it's not a closed channel.
About oral preparations of testosterone for women, are there any, and do compounding pharmacies? So I have had the odd person ask, and whether it was a naturopath or someone who prescribed it for them, or what other than to clear.
So that when I mentioned with the testosterone under canoate is an oral preparation that's been around for years, nandrolone. And it's available in Australia, but the absorption's all over the shop. So the holistic integrative doctors will prescribe sometimes the transdermal testosterone cream, which mostly doesn't get absorbed. And they'll also prescribe troches, which fascinate me because the troches are these sort of lozenges. They're usually disgusting colours and cost a lot of money. And the idea is that the patient puts it in their mouth and sucks it, and apparently it's all buccally absorbed, but if you suck it for 15 minutes, most of it's got to go through your gut. So, which is the same with the estrogen, buccally absorbed. But these have got to be prescribed by a physician, a doctor, GP, whatever.
Carolyn, could I ask for your opinion about using clomiphene in hypogonadotropic hypogonadism, if the MRI is normal?
I've actually got an answer for that, because I had to look that up. I spoke on this at a meeting last year. So, clomiphene, it's a bit like Yes Minister, okay? So you can't prescribe it, but you don't know that you can't prescribe it, and you have to go looking for a form that says you can apply to prescribe it, and it's different if you're in Victoria compared to if you're in Queensland. So when clomiphene prescribed in that setting by the IVF doctors, they are licensed to prescribe. Doesn't sound like 007, doesn't it? If we are prescribing it for men, have to actually apply on an individual basis. And there's actually good reason why one should look at clomiphene. There's actually reasonable data for clomiphene. I remember Rob and I looking at a poster at one of the US Endo meetings. This would be more than 10 years ago. But I guess because there's probably, I don't know, I suspect there's not a lot of money in it because it's already on the market. And it is in my opinion, it does potentially have a role. There are the side effects that go with it, the visual disturbance. We used it as a stimulation test in one of my PhD studies. It was obviously short term. And it was very effective, but we have a so my official line to you is it's not prescribed, we don't use it, it's not indicated. The answer is, when you look at the literature, there is a very good reason to ask the question you exactly are. I have to say I was guilty of unwittingly prescribing it on a private script, not realising you're not even allowed to prescribe it on a private prescription. It's not a decision between you and the patient, it's a decision that's made between you and the government, only you don't know that it's a decision made between you and the government because it doesn't tell you that anywhere. You have to go looking into a particular, Ewan and I did it one afternoon in clinic when I was running the lecture. You have to go looking to know that you're looking to find it, to ask the question and then apply. So most of the clomiphene that my patients use, and I suspect you know where I'm going with this, is the men who are looking to bodybuild and are using it in that context to regenerate their pituitary testicular axis. And I have to say, despite the fact that my PhD is in andrology, many of my patients are probably more informed about the different types of androgens and their impact and their regimens to renew their pituitary testicular axis function than I will ever know.
I'd like to thank you for a fantastic presentation, but I'm a cancer GP and I represent a very large clinic in Camps and San Remo. Until the recent changes, I think we're able to prescribe testosterone for levels less than 8, and I think I had more than 30 patients. The recent changes obviously reduced it to 6, plus necessary referral to endocrinologist, and in my case it is quite difficult. The waiting time could be 6 weeks. Some of my patients just dropped off because they didn't bother. They didn't want to go off testosterone replacement for 6 weeks or 8 weeks to document very low levels, 2 samples obviously, and they've got normal AH and they're symptomatic. So some of them really suffered because of that, and I do refer obviously for opinions, I really want them to be on it, and I'm convinced that it's necessary to continue. I send them with 2 low samples, I send them with normal LH, I send them with no contraindications, and I'm getting obviously an approval. So it's we feel slightly disadvantaged as a GP, and it's a lot of doctors in my clinic who feel the same.
I'm very happy to go on record and say I completely support it. There are many of my colleagues in endocrinology who do not practice. For example, Sue, you don't prescribe testosterone to men, and yet you are now eligible, but a GP who's practiced...
You're more experienced than
that's
me.
That's right, can't prescribe. I think it is ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. What I can say, again, is that we are very fortunate here in Melbourne. There are 2... I'm not sure how the Austin Clinic is run. We are a Medicare privatised clinic. A number of our andrologists that work in the clinic are here tonight. So Monash runs a clinic and the Austin run a clinic. Ours is a boutique clinic that is a bit of a secret. We, in fact, are not inundated with, Mel might be, regret saying that. We did actually, on that basis, look into setting up telehealth last year so that we could provide this service. That request is still sitting somewhere in administration, and I'm not likely to see it this century, I suspect. We are sympathetic. We fully appreciate that. But there are 2 public from both sides of town. It is a trip up, but once they've come up once and they have our name on the prescription, being the all-important consultant, as I say, in theory, they never have to come back. I do have a little bit of an issue that my name might be on a prescription where I haven't seen a patient for a number of years. So we sort of use the 2-year arbitrary cutoff, and we talk about a shared care protocol, but that's the best I can offer. I sympathise. We were very angry. I think it's inappropriate, but there was not a lot of consultation, shall we say, with the members of the supposed expert panel before these criteria came into being.
I'll just have a quick question. I'll probably not need a microphone. Have any of the studies been done, like with prescribing the intravaginal for the vaginal dryness, about using the other, using the same route for the testosterone or... has anything been done on that?
Yes, so we're doing a large randomised controlled trial of testosterone vaginally at the moment, but not to look for absorption to treat vaginal dryness. So there have been 4 studies so far using vaginal testosterone to treat vulvovaginal atrophy, and our particular interest is women on aromatase inhibitors. And those trials have not... one of them used... All the studies have used the 300 microgram dose vaginally, and one of them used a 3,000 microgram dose. And, it was like, why did they do that? And they got blood absorption. But the ones that used the low dose have found no blood absorption. So we're looking at the VVA in women on aromatase inhibitors.
Can you explain the blood absorption?
Well, if you give... the vagina is a very efficient way of absorbing medication. So this one study was published in JAMA Oncology. They used this massive dose of vaginal testosterone, and they saw an increase in testosterone in the blood, in the circulation, and some increase in estrogen as well. But they gave a dose that you would never give a woman anyway. So I don't even understand the basis for that study. But the ones that have used what would be more physiological dose, it appears that it actually improves vulvovaginal atrophy because there are a lot of testosterone androgen receptors in the vagina.
Transgender women and testosterone.
That's
after surgery.
And we're talking female to male? Male to female.
Sorry, male to female testosterone?
Yeah, would they need?
So after they've had
after
the surgery.
So, there's no if an individual transes from male to female and they go through the whole process and have ovarian they have a gonadectomy and they are on their ovarian hormones, they may or may not need testosterone. It will depend on their adrenal production of testosterone. That's why we don't see the decline in testosterone, or we often don't treat, and it's not appropriate to treat, so someone's in their late reproductive years as a biological woman, because you don't see the adrenal fall off corresponding with the ovarian fall off until that stage. So you might, that person may have sufficient DHEA production from their adrenal and androgen production from their adrenal not to need it. However, biologically for libido, they might be much more comfortable with a slightly higher testosterone. What I do find with some of these patients is that their skin androgen receptors are more sensitive to small doses. So when you give a very small dose of testosterone, they suddenly find they're getting hairy faces, etc. So you have to be very careful. It's a real, a much harder play between the dose you give and the side effects you might get.
Right. Thank you very much to both our speakers. Thank you to everyone for coming out tonight.